Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the 2008 presidential election, voter participation hit highs not seen in half a century, as 62% of eligible Americans cast ballots. Barack Obama was largely the beneficiary of this, with many newly registered voters choosing him over John McCain. But even with that impressive turnout 4 years ago, 80 million adults who could have voted stayed at home. And this year, the number of no-shows could be even higher. A new survey by Suffolk University and USA Today predicts 90 million Americans may sit this election out. Respondents gave a number of reasons, from I don't have time, to my vote doesn't matter, to the desire for a third-party candidate. Still, if these non-voters did go to the polls, the survey finds more of them would choose the president, with 55% viewing Mr. Obama favorably versus 25% for Republican nominee Mitt Romney, which may be a reason why certain strategists would want to spend generous resources on getting these people out to the polls. Today in The Exchange, the no vote, who these 90 million Americans are, why they feel as they do, and their impact on our political process. Let's hear from you this hour. Will you avoid the ballot box this year? Or do you have friends and family who plan to do so? Why do you think that's the case? And if you're an avid voter, what do you make of people who choose not to vote? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests joining us from the Boston area. Is David Palaiologos. He's director of the Suffolk University Political Research Center, which conducted the unlikely unregistered voter poll with USA Today. David, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Joining us from D.C. is Jan Leakley. She's a professor in the Department of Government at American University. Her research and teaching interests include voter turnout, American political behavior, and media. Her books include Strength in Numbers, The Political Mobilization of Racial and Ethnic Minorities. And Jan Leakley, good to have you, too. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, David, to you first, since you did the main work that we're looking at this hour, you've called this poll a poll of the other America. What are you saying there?
You're looking at a big, big block of residents, people who are eligible to vote, people who are all U.S. citizens, all 18 and above, and they are making a conscious effort not to vote. And looking forward, it's potentially a bigger problem for Barack Obama than people switching from Barack Obama to Mitt Romney. I don't think there are enough of those, but it's the people who take a pass on the election in November. In either case, you're a minus one away from Barack Obama, and I think if the outcome is either for Obama or not, I think it's going to be pivoted on the research done here of the non-voters.
Well, and that's what's so interesting is, you know, David, you see other polls and they always say 40% of likely voters or 50% of registered voters. You specifically flipped this on its head, didn't you? You talked to the unlikely voters.
It was amazing to actually terminate a person who was very likely to vote. It was a little awkward, actually.
But, by terminate, you mean once you find out they're likely to vote, you say, I don't want to talk to you.
We screen them out. And the people that we talked to aren't polled. You know, when we're asking those initial screen questions, are you registered or how likely are you to vote? Once they say I'm not registered, or once they say I'm registered but not likely to vote, normal surveys of likely voters, you terminate the call. So this was a little different, and a lot of the respondents really weren't used to taking surveys like this, where they were asked their political beliefs given their low intensity or their failure to be registered.
Jan, what do you make of this type of research? Again, looking at the flip side of these surveys, that's very rarely shown.
It is great to hear that we have some more details about the individuals who choose not to vote. We do have a long line of research on who votes and why they vote and how their policy preferences are different or not. And I think David's work is really terrific at filling in the broad contours over the last couple decades.
And what do you make, Jan, as someone who follows voter behavior, of this projection that David and his crew have? 90 million Americans may not show up. 90 million.
You know, that is a big number for a whole lot of things. I think for voter turnout, those are a lot of people staying home, and slightly more than, some might say substantially more than in the last presidential election. But at the same time, we're only used to about 52% of turnout in presidential elections. So while we might dip below that, this isn't a new or unusual experience.
Yeah, follow up a little bit on that, David, if you could. So it's not like our turnout numbers are robust and then all of a sudden they're plummeting. Go ahead, David.
No, we only see it as dramatic because the backdrop before which the research is laid is 2008, which was a historic election, first African-American president, hope and change, a lot of young people engaged. And now we're seeing sort of much lower intensity. And when we look at even, you know, Europe and New Hampshire, states like New Hampshire, where Barack Obama beat John McCain by about 70,000 votes in 08, and yet about 300,000 residents in New Hampshire didn't vote in 08. And so, and that could be higher, you know, that could be 330, 350 come November. And, you know, most of the polls in New Hampshire right now are really close. So although it's been sort of a consistent phenomenon, as Jan indicates, it could have a huge impact on the race.
Wow, 300,000 New Hampshire residents didn't vote in 08. That's huge to me, David. We're not that big a state, 1.3 million people.
That's right, and you had about a million eligible, but only about 700,000 votes cast, or 710. So you're looking at a huge number, given that, you know, the difference between Barack Obama and John McCain was only 70,000.
Wow.
Can I jump in
here,
Laura?
Sure, go ahead, Jan.
To say it's also important to know that it's huge, but the important thing is it's not a random group of individuals who are sitting out. And that's really the key to me and why I think turnout is so important to consider. If we had 50% of turnout in a presidential election or 50% of turnout of citizens in New Hampshire, if that was a random collection of individuals, maybe who the candidate they would elect would be the same candidate as if we had 100% of people or citizens vote that day. And so maybe the political and policy consequences would not differ. But though I have not looked at New Hampshire data, and David likely has more on this, nationally, the group of people who do show up at the polls are quite different from the people who stay at home. And that's the other part of it, not just the absolute number of people who are staying home, but that those folks look differently from those who show up at the polls.
Well, and let's definitely dig into the demographics, because you're right, it's not a random group of individuals sitting out, as you said, Jan. Let me invite our listeners, too, to join us. Our number for you to be part of our conversation this morning on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We're looking at the possible no vote in the upcoming election based on a recent survey showing as many as 90 million Americans may sit out this election. If you are one of them thinking that you might not bother going to the polls, give us a call, tell us why. Or if you've got friends or family members who aren't planning to vote, why do you think that's the case? Also, if you are an avid, enthusiastic voter, what do you make of people who choose not to vote? Our number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can post a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And both of you, let's get into what Jan just said, who these non-voting folks are. And David, go ahead. What's some of the demographics that you can give us of these likely non-voters, race, age, income level, and so forth?
Sure. Well, we know that there's a disproportionate amount of non-voters, if you will, unlikely voters, who are younger, less educated, lower income. And there were a higher minority, of course, And there was a disproportionate amount of registered Democrats of those who were registered to registered Republicans. So one might think, initially looking at the data, and conclude, well, they polled more Democrats than Republicans. But it, really, the flip side is true. For every registered Republican sitting out in November, there are two Democrats. And that's why I think it's potentially problematic for Democratic candidates and for the president, because there were a lot of respondents who did vote in 2008 or who are Democrats, but at least at the time the poll was fielded, which was before the conventions, you know, you've got 30% registered Democrats, 14% Republicans, 23% independents or other, and 31% not registered. And that does not match party registration nationally, either by party affiliation, race, or age.
Another question for you, David, and then Jan, I want your thoughts too. So, David, they tend to be young, less educated, lower income, more minorities, more leaning Democratic. Any differences among men or women or region of the country, like more likely to be from the North versus the South?
Slightly more from the South. The gender break was 52-48, which is pretty consistent. And one interesting number was the amount of folks who reported themselves as unemployed was 19%.
Wow.
Nationally, and permanently disabled 5%. So I think what the poll is picking up are people who are just beaten down in terms of their own economic situation. They're hurting financially, spiritually, physically, in the case of people who are permanently disabled, and there is a, sort of an immediacy for their own personal plight that is trumping any concerns about voting or interest in any particular candidates.
All right. Well, after a short break, we'll start taking your calls and talk a lot more about these demographics. Also, what some of these folks surveyed said about why they weren't going to the polls. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email. Keep them short. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More on a new survey showing as many as 90 million Americans are likely to sit out this election on the exchange on NHPR and then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the battle for women voters in the 2012 presidential election. Classical New Hampshire is a classical music service in the Granite State, a partnership between NHPR and Highland Community Broadcasting. Classical New Hampshire brings the best classical music performances from around the world to New Hampshire. Online everywhere at classicalnh.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Core Gastroenterology of Exeter, offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders, corephysicians.org, the art of wellness. And from Nathan Wexler & Company, CPAs and business advisors, serving entrepreneurial clients who share a passion for competency, integrity, and community enrichment, 224-5357. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing a recent survey which finds as many as 90 million Americans may not vote in this election. We invite you to join us with your thoughts, questions, comments. Are you planning to avoid the polls this year? Or do you have people in your life, friends or family, who are not planning to vote? Why is that the case? Also, if you are a regular voter, what do you think about people who decide not to vote? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Jan Leakley, real quickly, and then we'll go to our listeners. What do you make of some of those demographics that David gives us? These non-voters are more likely to be young, less educated, lower income, unemployed, more minorities, more leaning demographics. Your thoughts on that, Jan, and then we'll go to our listeners.
I'd add two things. All of these are fairly consistent with what we've known about elections for a long time. I think what David has pointed out about youth is a big, there's been more of a change in terms of the relative turnout rates between youth and older individuals, so a much steeper increase in voting as you age. So older Americans now are far better represented in the electorate than are younger individuals, more so than over the past 20 or 30 years. And I think they're the question I always turn to would be the possible policy consequences of that. We have big issues about health care and benefits and the role of the state or the government with supporting individuals. We have budget issues, and clearly these groups have different, perhaps, perspectives or views. And so if voting matters, that might well translate to differences in policy outcomes.
Let's go to our listeners. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Seth is waiting in Manchester. Hi, Seth. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. So I want to preface my comment by saying that I'm 25. I am employed. I'm above the poverty line, and I am educated. But I do want to say that I haven't voted in the last two election cycles, almost purely because of the Electoral College. And I think that the at this stage in our democratic development in this country, I'm not so sure that we need the Electoral College anymore. And so, I think it shows less confidence in voters. Really.
Seth, can you tell us what it is about the Electoral College? And again, this is the sort of odd way that various votes are pulled together for presidential candidates. It's not done on popular vote, in other words.
Exactly.
What is it that bothers you about that and makes you not go to the polls?
What bothers me is that I think, you know, we have one of the highest educated, you know, I guess voter force in the world, and we still are not trusted to elect our leaders purely on popular vote. I think that's a little ridiculous at this point.
Seth, let me ask you a question. Do you think the parties, the Democratic and Republican parties, do a good job of representing America's political views, or do you think a third party or multiple parties are necessary?
Well, I'm kind of a fan of European democratic process with multiple parties. I know it causes some problems in, you know, trying to make actual decisions because there are a lot of different opinions. But I think two parties is it's an on or an off switch on most issues, which is a little troubling as well.
Seth, thanks a lot for calling in. Jan, what do you think? You know, you do hear a lot more attention these days on the number of votes needed in this state or that state, and less on sort of energizing the broad American public.
Yeah, I think that the rules matter, surely, with the Electoral College being at issue for some individuals. We still have national campaigns, though increasingly those campaigns focus resources to the battleground states. I think that's the problem with that is, you know, if you're not in a battleground state, you don't see much of that presidential campaign. The good news is we have new forms of media for those people who are engaged and interested. You can pursue on the internet. You can find out what's happening in those other states, what those campaigns are doing. If we don't know that, then in fact we don't have national candidates, and that creates more problems for governance. Whoever's elected, if you run 50 different campaigns offering different things to different people, how do you then claim to represent the national, a national electorate?
You know, Seth, thanks for that call. And I want to follow up with you, Seth, with an email that I just got in from Jack, who says, with the Electoral College system in many states, it seems there's not much reason to vote. New Hampshire is not one of those states. Here, your vote does count. So that's Jack kind of talking to you, Seth. But also, David, to the broader point, you know, Seth and Jack are right. To some extent, you know that certain states are going to go Republican or Democratic. So what do you think about folks in those states who don't go to the polls, David? Do they have some justification there?
Well, they sure do. And it's you know, one of the responses, you know, of why people aren't registered or why they don't vote is my vote doesn't count or matter. That showed up on both the unregistered and the registered, but not likely. But also, in terms of what we do in the research community, I mean, I can speak for Suffolk University. We poll all over the country, but we're only polling states that, in our judgment, matter in terms of the outcome, because these polls cost a lot to do, and it takes a lot of time and resources to field these polls and to do all of the statistical backup, and the state research backup. So we're only polling 5 or 6 states this fall, the entire election season, and we're going to ignore the other 45 in terms of our attention between now and Election Day. And I don't know if we'll ever poll North Dakota or Montana or Wyoming, you know, as long as we're doing presidential, you know, elections and state elections. And that's, you know, that's the hard reality. That's sort of the economics of the research industry. And, you know, if you sort of tool around at Real Clear Politics and you go out to, you know, states like Idaho and, you know, other states that we know the outcome, you know, Alabama, the last presidential poll taken in those states are, you know, maybe 6, 8, 9 months ago. No one's polling them for that very reason.
So are you saying, David, that your survey mostly covers or completely covers just those so-called battleground states?
Well, no, the national survey was done in all 50 states.
I see.
And included what we used as a baseline is we basically took all the what we call the voter eligible population, which is a little bit different than what the census uses, which is voter age population. We took voter eligible population, subtracted out votes cast in 2008 per state, and then we built a sample frame per state by state and put them into regions based on what the U.S. Census Bureau uses for regions, and then we had weights for each region and quotas and so on. So it was a national survey, but in terms of our individual battleground state polls this fall and our planning for the likely voter polls that we're doing this fall,
I see.
We're only focusing on the 5 or 6 states that swing.
I see. But for your unlikely unregistered voters,
no,
that was a nationwide.
Nationally.
All right. Let's.
Every state represented in that poll.
Let's go back to our audience. And Ken is calling in from Antrim. Hi, Ken, you're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks a lot. I work with the McCain-Feingold bill for the campaign finance reform up in Concord for almost a decade. And last year, with the Citizens United just gutting any hope of that ever happening, it seemed to me that it's put just the big money in control of the elections, and I can see why people have been disenfranchised.
So, Ken, are you not going to vote this year because of that?
I'm really thinking of not voting because it just seems to be the division is so severe in this system right now that nothing is getting done. So, and it hasn't been that bad since before the Civil War, it seems like, to me.
So big money makes you feel like your vote doesn't count. Is that what you're saying? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Ken.
Well, that and just the ineffectiveness of our government, it seems like, in the past 2 years.
You know, Jan, this is something that David's survey found. People feel disgusted with government, disappointed in government. There is the role of big money. Pick up on what he says. I'm thinking he's expressing a feeling that you've heard before.
Certainly. I think part of the problem here is that what we see in the media, and part of that's a media portrayal, part of it is surely very real in terms of how business is done in Congress, if we're looking at Congress as our federal officials, that it's all on the conflict and not coming to agreements, right? You know, the reality is that one of the reasons that there are these stalemates and, you know, the cliff, you know, coming soon, budget-wise, one of the reasons is because we have substantial differences in public opinion on what is right for the country right now. We've just come through this huge economic crisis, kind of unknown in the past several decades, and we're, as a friend of mine refers to it as, and I think it's a common term, the new normal, right? And I think it's the new normal in voting in terms of how the economy and economic circumstances will affect people and whether they show up to vote or not. I think in terms of the Supreme Court decision that the caller referred to, I'm sorry, I forget your name, it's a new normal in campaign finance.
Citizens United, that
Citizens
Penn
United,
references.
Yeah. You know, our past research on political science suggests that everyone complains about negative advertising, but you know what?
It works.
It works. They learn from it. They pay more attention because of it. Now, will this new source of spending put on negative ads that are not just negative but cross some sort of line in terms of claims or the focus or the drama? You know, so maybe it's a new normal for that campaign advertising. But I would say just because people don't like it doesn't mean maybe there isn't some information gained or it doesn't, you know, become part of a campaign that people pay attention to.
You know, David, what do you think also about Ken's points? This came up in your survey, right? People just feeling, you know, kind of disgusted, disappointed with government, and therefore they didn't want to go to the polls.
Yeah, 59% said they don't pay attention to politics because nothing ever gets done. It's a bunch of empty promises. 31% strongly agreed. 28% agreed with that. And you also have this feeling of corruption. You know, with the statement that I don't pay attention to politics because it is so corrupt, 54% strongly agree with that. So, you know, you've got sort of these trinkets of information where people, you know, as one of the previous callers indicated, you know, may not be lower income, maybe they're middle income or higher income, but they're making a conscious decision to abstain from the process. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we as a society, the education community, can look at this. Not only our study, but many studies that have been done. Pew did a study in 2010, and others have been done to say, you know, this is a real problem. This isn't, you know, 5 million people or 10 million people. When you're talking about 85, 90, 95 million Americans, that means that everyone listening to this show right now knows someone who isn't registered to vote in their immediate circle. It might be their family, friends, nephews, nieces, or that is registered and very opinionated but won't vote. You know, you go through the voting list in a particular town and you say, oh, my God, this person didn't vote. You know, they may even be on a local committee or something, and they're not voting. So it's a real problem, and you know, it certainly needs to be addressed. I'm not saying that it's new. Janice is right. You know, it's been a consistent problem, but as the population increases and these numbers start to drop with the polarization in Washington, you know, there may come a time when, you know, when 40% or 45% of eligible population is voting and a clear majority, 55-60%, are not.
Wow.
Laura, can I
Yeah, go ahead,
here?
Jen.
A couple of the comments have referred to in terms of not liking government or nothing ever gets done. However true those things might be in different forms, I think the thing we have to keep in mind is whether we like it or not, it's still the way that collective problems and issues are addressed in our society. And so one of the decisions is, you know, unless the whole system is going to be changed, and until that happens, do you want to be at the table or not, right? You know, and think about it, that it's not just a – think about it. We complain about it in terms of the public sector and government. But, you know, I just spent the last week doing battle with a cable provider and going through, you know, the phone system things where you're talking to people – and going in lengthy conversations and the automate. I do not like customer service in the private sector anymore. I don't like that system. But you know what? If I wanted to have TV programs, I had to use the system. I didn't like it, but I did it. And so my concern about that, the non-voters, are you're letting someone else whose interests, public or personal, could be quite different from yours. And so you're giving up that voice.
You know, a couple of our callers have said they may not vote. I want to share two emails with both of you from people who it seems like they definitely will vote. Here's one from Roger in Hillsborough who says, I've long thought voting should be mandatory in the U.S. as it is in Australia as a basic requirement of citizenship. Civics and civic responsibility should be a major component of our education system to stress the importance of our representative government and the value of the individual's vote, kind of what you were just saying, Jan. Roger also says, I also think mandatory voting would have a positive effect over the corrupting influence of money in politics. If everybody voted, it would become much more difficult to influence the outcome of an election. So there's Roger, and I've got another one for you, but real quick to you, Jan, what do you think? Mandatory voting, hard to imagine them going that far.
You know, it works in other countries. It likely won't work here. Right. But it certainly is. The contrast is really amazing to think about that sort of public claim or emphasis on this is something people should do, you know, in contrast to what seem to be most of the conversations these days with making it harder and more difficult to vote and the whole, you know, legal movement in many of the states that seem to they want to establish responsible and effective systems so that the people who are eligible to vote are the only ones who are voting. But I fear that sometimes that discussion is, you know, becomes more than that and seems to be emphasize who shouldn't vote as opposed to who should vote.
All right. Let's take another call. This is David in Keene. Hi, David. Thanks for waiting. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. She touched on the part about, I think, the voting being blocked by, you know, the voter ID. But I was going to talk about the wars and how it seems the new normal is war, constant war. And I'm not going to vote for that. So I may not be voting.
Well, the wars are said to be winding down, David. So I wonder, does that change your feelings there or not?
Well, they say winding down. I'll believe it when I see it. We have military bases all over the world. And people are talking about gearing us up to participate in a war in Iran. And I don't know. I just don't trust it.
David, thanks a lot for calling in. You know, David Palaiologos, to his first point about voter ID laws, there has been a lot of coverage of these laws now in place in more than 30 states, including New Hampshire. How did the unlikely voters that you talked to feel about voter ID?
They were okay with it. But I think, you know, by their own admission, they're not connected and they're not informed. So they're not aware of situations where people who are trying to vote get turned away. 75% of respondents said when we asked, do you believe citizens should be required to show a photo ID before voting? 75% agreed with it. Only 19% disagreed with it. So, you know, you've got something else going on with these people. They know it's easy to register and they know it's easy to vote, and they have no problem with showing an ID, but yet they're not voting.
All right, and we will take more of your calls and emails after a short break, so stay with us.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from AARP presenting You've Earned a Say, a community discussion on Medicare and Social Security, inviting Granite Status to join the conversation. Questionnaire at aarp.org/NH. And the Telegraph, innovative local news coverage and advertising opportunities for today's complexities, online at nashuatelegraph.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Our goal is to leave a living legacy to organizations we love and respect.
Woolsey Conover of Holderness, New Hampshire, is a lifetime listener of public radio.
While we are here on this earth, it's our privilege to support them. And when we depart, we will have the joy and satisfaction of knowing that our support goes on. That's why we have established a state plan that includes New Hampshire Public Radio.
For more information about NHPR's planned giving program, visit nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we kick off our Issue of the Week election series with a look at how the candidates approach the issue of job creation. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at why an estimated 90 million Americans may sit out this upcoming election. Join us with your thoughts and comments. Are you planning to avoid the polls this year? Or do you have people in your immediate circle, friends or family, who won't vote? Tell us why you think that's the case. Also, if you are a regular, enthusiastic voter, what do you think about people who choose not to vote? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. David Palaiologos is with us, director of the Suffolk University Political Research Center, which conducted the unlikely voter poll with USA Today. Also joining us, Jan Leakley, professor in the Department of Government at American University. Her research and teaching interests include voter turnout and American political behavior. And both of you, I want to share a comment on our Facebook page that just came in. This is from Ryan. He says, I'm a 35-year-old white educated male. I did not vote in 08, and I won't vote in November. I'm a registered Republican. Ryan says, the bottom line is that either Obama or Romney will win. Neither represent the qualities of leadership I am looking for. Whether I vote or not is irrelevant. David, we really should follow up on this. Ryan, thanks a lot for your comment. Because you found this exact sentiment in a lot of the people that you talked to. They didn't like either candidate, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, and they don't believe that the parties are representative of Americans' political views. I mean, this is a very frustrating poll to sort of pore over, but, I mean, it's part of our fabric. This is part of America. 32% of respondents said that the Democratic and Republican parties are good enough for representing Americans' political views. 53% said that a third party is necessary or multiple parties are necessary. Now, we know when we look at the likely voter polls that it's not often that people will vote for a third-party candidate, either because they're not well-financed or they don't connect with voters, Ross Perot being the exception in 1992 and 1996. But, you know, this is part of the fabric of America.
Jan, what do you make about that, the hunger for a third party?
You know, I was thinking instead about the person who commented on the Facebook page, that one of the problems, as David has identified, is that these folks are staying home. The phrase I hear commonly is, you know, whether Republican or Democrat, it's not my party anymore, from older individuals that, you know, which to me suggests, I think, less that about what the Facebook person noted, that it's about the candidates, but it's instead about the policies or issues that the parties are talking about are not the policies or issues that they want represented. And I think by staying home, what ends up happening is you end up getting a less representative group of folks who campaigns target and who show up at the polls, and perhaps policies that aren't as representative.
So it kind of, when you don't vote, are you saying you're only exacerbating the thing that bugs you, Jan?
Yes, I think that's clearly the case.
Well, Ryan, thank you for posting a comment on our Facebook page. You can send us an email, too, if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And let's go next to Portsmouth. Mark is waiting there. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Laura, there is an old saying, if you want 10 terrifying minutes, talk to the typical American voter. And they'll be someone who votes. So if someone is that disengaged, do we want them voting? Don't get me wrong. If someone wants to vote and they're eligible, they should vote. But good Lord, if someone is that disengaged, do we really want them voting?
Well, what do you mean by that?
I mean that if they don't know, if they're that disengaged, and this, and I'm not talking about the people who've been calling your show, even those who are saying they're not going to vote, they're engaged at some level. But the typical, my thought is that the people he is talking about do not listen to NPR, and they are totally disengaged, and they wouldn't know President Obama from Mitt Romney if they came up and shook their hand. I'm serious. That, you know, we're used to listening to your program where people are engaged.
Well, what are you saying, Mark, then, that we shouldn't bemoan the fact that 90 million may not vote. If they're that disengaged, then who cares what they think?
They've made their choice. It's a choice not to vote. They have made their choice. That is their vote.
Well, Mark, thank you for calling in. And, you know, David, this is real interesting, and I'm glad he called. Instead of saying, oh, it's terrible, 90 million won't vote, Mark is saying, you know, to heck with them.
Yeah. And people were saying that in response to the question of the people who are registered but unlikely. 13% said it's my right to vote or not to vote. It's exactly what the caller is referring to. And he's also sort of touching on the, and this is a slippery slope, of course, the political IQ of the people who are identifying themselves as non-voters. We did ask a question to that point. Can you tell me the name of the Vice President of the United States? In an open-ended question, only 39% of respondents nationally could correctly name Joe Biden.
Only 39%?
That's right.
Wow.
So, you know, again, these are people who are truly hurting, you know, in one way or another, you know, either financially, physically, spiritually, you know, and totally disillusioned with the process on the one hand, but they're also just not informed. And, you know, when we did the crosstab breakout in that question of by education, as one would expect, it's lowest at the lower educated, no high school or GED. It was only 27%, all the way up to master's degree plus, where it was 64%. And that's supposed to be a good number. People with a master's degree or better, 64% are naming Joe Biden. I don't know what the remaining 36% were thinking.
What do you think about this, Jan? Real interesting point that Mark makes.
Well, I don't think it's factual information is helpful, right? We might think that the better information that we have, like do we know who the vice president is, would be helpful in making good votes or voting correctly, if you will, a phrase used in political science. But at the same time, boy, if you were to push me on the ins and outs of economic policy or trade regulation or, you know, the surge in the war, I would be hard-pressed. And even that, if we go beyond the factual information, there are a lot of people who don't think that NPR listeners are especially correctly informed about the world, right? So I think it's not quite as black and white as some people know and understand politics and other people don't. We might think about elections as ways in which people can express who they think is a better choice, however policy-oriented that choice might be, even if I do, in fact, know about things such as financial reform and war strategy and international relations. I might not know what's best for the person who is homeless or the person who just lost their job.
So we're all sort of uninformed in one way, shape, or form. Is that what you're saying, Jen?
Yeah. Exactly. What kind of information is required to make a good choice is not may not be especially clear. And to suggest that someone shouldn't be able to express their preference in a democracy when it's supposed to be about each individual, regardless of qualifications of education or income or knowledge, you know, is, I think, probably heading the wrong direction. But certainly the caller identifies some people make a thoughtful choice and claim that they're not voting because that is their preferred option.
Let's take another call. This is Debbie in Contoocook. Hi, Debbie, you're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I'm concerned with disenfranchisement in two ways. One, I'm concerned with the law that was passed over Governor Lynch's head, which would make students have to get a register a car if they have one in state in order to be able to vote. Many students can't afford to register a car and may not bother because they can't afford it. The other thing I'm concerned about is I'm concerned about voter ID. I want to know if centers have been set up. It's in part a way to disenfranchise the poor and the disabled who may not have a way to get an ID. Have centers been set up? Has transportation been set up? this is a tremendously difficult issue, and it's key to our democracy.
Debbie, thanks a lot for calling in. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, David, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think the you know, you always think of follow-up questions you wish you asked. I mean, going into this poll, I thought the voter ID question, at least for these voters, would be a bigger deal. And they may not be so willing to be okay with it. But, you know, the numbers are the numbers. And but, you know, there are many instances, and we've got Rachel Cobb here at Suffolk University who's done great work in terms of ensuring, at least in our elections in the Boston and the Massachusetts elections, we have spotters, Suffolk University spotters, who will be there to assist voters if they believe that there's a problem, you know. And I wish, you know, I wish it were bigger, you know, just in terms of the narrative and the conversation, because you're gonna hear stories bubble up with states going with early voting and you know, cases where people have been turned away or, you know, can't vote even though they want to.
Well, Debbie, thanks for the call. And NHPR has been following this story, by the way, of the student, the challenge to the student voting in New Hampshire and whether they have to register New Hampshire as a domicile. So our newsroom has been following that. Although your survey did find, in terms of voter ID, David, again, 75% of the unlikely voters said, yeah, voter ID is no problem, right?
Right. Their problems were much bigger and much more personal. And, you know, if everybody voted who was eligible to vote, this wouldn't even be a close election. Barack Obama was beating Mitt Romney by a 2-to-1 margin among this subset of voters. And you wouldn't even have a close election if you even think the election is close right now.
Let's take one more if we could. And Tim's waiting in Durham. Hi, Tim, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, welcome. I've been doing a lot of canvassing this summer, both, well, I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a Democrat, and I'm actually one of our 424 citizen legislatures. So I should remind non-voters there are a lot of offices below the president and the governor, so it's not just, you know, it's not just about those two offices. But
well, it's a good point, yeah. Go ahead.
I've noticed two things with non-voters, and we've been, a lot of our effort has been trying to get people, non-voters, to go ahead and vote, hopefully for our side. But one is they think voting is very difficult, you know, that you have to gather lots of information, that's a big hassle, and actually, of course, the new voter law, voter ID laws and so forth are actually making it a bit more difficult. And then also, something else that's interesting, they often say they're disgusted by the bickering and the negative ads, which for a political junkie like me is surprising because I frankly take it for granted and really don't even notice it unless there's something, you know, either particularly egregiously awful or something that's, you know, really funny, like Jackie Silly's zombie ad, which I love. So I'm baffled these people are sort of paying attention to something that maybe the people more involved like don't even notice.
Well, what do you say, Tim, when you knock on a door and someone very politely says, well, thank you for your time, but no, I really am not going to bother? What do you say?
Well, sometimes we just have to say, well, you know, thank you. Usually best thing to do is just say thank you for your time. You know, if they're not going to vote at all, we really don't have to chase them around anymore. But try to convince them that it's important. And so if you're a candidate yourself, you can point out that your race is important, you know, that, you know, I wouldn't be there if I didn't think it made a big difference.
And mm-hmm. Donuts and coffee and a ride to the polls. Do you go that far?
If we have to, yes. I can't guarantee the donuts or coffee, but there will be right. Both parties, I'm sure, will have rides to the polls.
Thanks a lot, Tim, for calling in. You know, Jan, I was just looking at some research this morning that hits right on what Tim was saying, and it said that they, meaning the experts who study this stuff, have found out that the best way to get a non-voter to go to the polls is to do exactly what Tim is doing, door-to-door. It's better than mass media. It's better than internet ads. It's better than a phone call. Better than anything else is somebody like Tim knocking at your door.
Absolutely. I think one of the stories of the 2008 election, there was a lot of coverage and discussion of how the Obama campaign put so much resources into the social media, and now I think Republicans are putting more effort and perhaps catching up in some ways. And so all the emphasis is on the new technology. But most of the systematic research that we have is that It just, the door-to-door, face-to-face, when politics becomes real people having real conversations, that either is that because those conversations are perhaps two-way or substantively they're different, they're more likely to get people to the polls.
You know, David, to you, pollsters like you, I'm guessing, are often pleased when their predictions turn out to be right. In this case, I'm guessing you're hoping to be wrong, right? I mean, you hope more than 90 million, I mean, less than 90 million people will sit out.
Absolutely. I don't, the numbers speak for themselves. It was an amazing exercise for me to go through, not only because it took forever to complete the process. You know, usually we're in and out of field and in 3 days or three nights, and this was basically a two-week ordeal. And when I called around to some of the pollsters I knew and some of the researchers, Michael McDonald at George Mason and a bunch of other people, who worked on the U.S. Elections Project, they were confirming that they hadn't heard of anyone doing a poll this year, and good luck getting the respondents. And
these unlikely unregistered. Yeah, go ahead.
They were right. They were right. It was very difficult. And I, you know, was fortunate enough to monitor some of the calls, and it was very stressful to hear their voices and to hear the plight of a lot of Americans who are, you know, we're all one family, and to hear, you know, how difficult it was for them to manage their own lives and how disgusted they were with the political system and making this decision not to vote. And obviously there'll be consequences with that, not only at the national level, but in Senate races and in other races.
Well, David and Jan, thank you very much for joining us today. David, thank you very much for talking about your research with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That's David Palaiologos, director of the Suffolk University Political Research Center, which conducted the new unlikely unregistered voter poll with USA Today. Jan Leakley, good to have you. Thank you very much.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Jan Leakley, professor in the Department of Government at American University. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about what we're planning, upcoming shows, and get extra links and material. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we kick off our Issue of the Week series with Where the Candidates Stand on Job Creation. It's the number one talking point of this political season, with contenders for governor, Congress, and president offering an array of solutions for getting Americans back to work. We'll compare their different plans, what the campaigns are saying, and how it's playing with voters. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock on...